it's sort of the perfecting of that process of getting that firing right and getting because you need to get these this firing up to, you know, for earthenware just over 1,000 degrees centigrade, and then for stoneware, which fires higher than earthenware, it's, you know, close to 1200, and then when you get to porcelain, it has to be over 1200 to properly do the firing. That's also sort of difference between those three types of clay, is sort of the, sort of how vitrified it gets. Basically, earthenware lets the most water in, porcelain lets the least in. And also porcelain is slightly different in how it's made in the materials. And porcelain is the one that's the most scarce of all the clays. That's the one where, where I need to really, I should start looking into what do I do if suddenly we can no longer, you know, there's no clay shipments coming in from China.
I was going to ask, like, I wondered whether, because obviously, like, one of the things that I sort of picked up on in the course of writing the notes for this was the ways in which, like, historically climate change have, like, impacted the kind of very base materials of which like these types of vessels are made, and like the types of innovations that have to be implemented in order to sort of, like, you know,
I've got a great example for that, which is that that Delftware is earthenware. It's all white, so it has that classic sort of, you know, China porcelain look, but it is traditionally earthenware because that's what they had cheap access to in Europe. So they made it to look like porcelain by using white tin glazes, which I also use now. But so it's this, so you're already then in sort of the inception of the traditional Delftware, is they started copying the Asian ceramics, but because they couldn't get porcelain because it was too expensive, they just did it in local earthenware and then put white glaze on it. And that's good enough.
I was going to ask you, like, in terms of, like, is there discussion in the sort of pottery community right now about, I mean, you sort of alluded to it in the sense of, like, well, if shipments of certain materials aren't arriving, then, you know, that sort of limits the amount of, like, potentially limits the amount of work that, like, you can do, or at least limits the type of materials that you can use. And I wondered whether, like, how big of a problem is this in a pottery community where, like, the access to, like, you know, ground materials and stuff is sort of essential to, you know, everything else kind of working. Is there, like, concerns about climate change in terms of it being, like, how, you know, how, whether it makes this trade, like, sustainable, or at least kind of what practices need to be altered in order to sort of counteract that?
I mean, I think it's the specialist clays, like porcelain, are the ones that sort of, I think, are most likely to run into trouble. I think we've not really had a big sort of thing about this. I think at some point it might happen, but there is a lot of clay out there still, a lot of clay out there. you know, there are still innovations being made in clay, because you get bone china, which literally has bones in it. And they're now, you know, they've been making, it's magnesium clay. So there are, people are also experimenting with different materials for clay, but it's a thing, clay, you know, it takes a very long time to develop into those layers in the earth to get the right different types of clay. So yeah, it is a limited amount, but there is a hell of a lot of clay out there. And also, you know, potters, you can absolutely dig up clay in a field in England and sift it and then test it and potentially make a pot out of it. You can absolutely do that. You know, you might struggle with finding the perfect bit that's really good for it, but you can do it. So I think people will always sort of be able to sort of adapt. You can also adapt clays by mixing materials. So it's quite sustainable in terms of the raw material. It's, you know, thinking about firings and making those more sort of energy efficient can be a big question climate-wise, because that is a thing that with pottery you can really sort of struggle to solve as a problem, because ultimately if you need to get these pots up to a certain temperature, it requires this amount of energy to go in. So there's sort of, you know, questions about that. But then the great thing in ceramics is that until you fire something, you can always turn it back to usable clay. So if you make a pot and you let it dry out, it can be completely bone dry, but if you put it in a bucket with water, it will completely dissolve again, and you can reconstitute it into usable clay again. So there is, you know, there will always be waste,
Yeah.
When you fire things, it doesn't go right. But, you know, in it, everyday work in a studio, it's a really nice thing when you teach people and you can actually tell them it doesn't matter if you mess up, if it yeah. goes completely wrong, because it just goes in the bucket and we'll use it again later.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to approach. That's such an interesting answer. I also wanted to ask you about, like, so this is sort of where we get into like the dummies masterclass approach to this, which is like, do you have like a dummies guide on how to make a pot? Like when, if like you're a new person and you sort of get into pottery, or you like, you're interested in getting into pottery, you show up to one of these classes, is there a type of pot that you're usually taught how to make, like the very sort of basic one?
No, the most basic one would be like a pinch pot bowl. So you literally get a bowl of clay that fits in your hand, and with your thumb you pinch it into the shape of a bowl. It's the most simple thing you can make, but it's a real basis for making larger things, because you can make two of them, you put them together, you know, you cross hatch along the line, put a bit of wetter clay around it, put them together, smooth it out, and you've got a sphere. You know, a lot with pottery techniques, you learn to make a basic shape. So a pinch pot, where you make just a bowl by pinching with your thumb into a bowl of clay, you know, you can smooth out the outside and make a really nice smooth bowl, or you can make it a more taller shape and you've got a cup. You know, but it's the moment you get the clay actually in your hand and you start feeling the material that you'll immediately get a sense for what you can do with it as well. It's a really nice thing when you get people, when you teach them for the first time, people immediately want to make all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you also get first lessons, you know, you've got your hand building and then you've got your throwing. Now the throwing is that's a whole separate, you're going to have to get a proper instructor with a wheel whole thing. But for simple classes, it's, you know, hand building. So it's pinch pots with your thumb, or it's coil pots where you roll out long sausages of clay and you coil up a pot and then smooth the clay into itself.
Mm.
And that way you can get quite big pots, and it's actually, you know, if you get really good at it, they can make massive things that way. That's sort of the sort of oldest technique, really, is the pinch pot and the coiling a pot.
Mm.
And then, of course, there's the throwing. Now, that's the one that I really recommend to people. If you go for a class, go for a taster class for throwing, because that's where the fun's at in pottery.
Yeah, right. I didn't realize that there were always differences. Is there a case where like you can sometimes jump into the deep end? Like if you're a newbie, like should you really like? I mean, provided I guess you have an instructor, so like maybe that would be all right. But is it the case that you would sort of lose control if you were like kind of immediately went on sort of the throwing of clay, when really what you need to do first is like sort of build yourself up and then get to that point?
I mean, it's really sort of what you want to do. If you want to be really self-directed, hand building is probably the easier thing to start with, because you can literally just buy a bag of clay and get going. Whereas wheel throwing, I mean, I'd recommend go for a lesson, and then if you're into it, you can go for a proper course or longer time. But even just that first lesson, it'll give you a sense of also how tricky it actually is.
Yeah,
you can absolutely go directly for the throwing. You know, it's a whole technique in and of itself. But you know, there's also still so much you can do. And with throwing, it's really nice getting better at it if you start doing it. And with a little bit of effort, you can get to making a nice cup or bowl. I do really recommend people, especially people have watched the Great Pottery Throwdown. It's go for a throwing lesson. It's great. It's great.
So a few of my friends have like gotten into, it feels like a very like 30s thing where, you know, you're sort of like, you know, looking for like wholesome day trips and stuff.
Yes.
And it sort of seems like there's been like a surge, or at least kind of like a bit of a boom in pottery classes. Well, this is the thing, because I was thinking like while I was writing that like my only reference to pottery in popular culture was Ghost. And I'm not sure like how prevalent that is anymore. But now it's like there are people who like, because I had a friend, like a couple who they went to a pottery class, and I actually did say, oh, like, you know, did you like do the thing in Ghost? And they were like, what's the thing in Ghost? And I was like, how do you not know?
They didn't know the thing from Ghost.
How do you know how do you not know like the famous thing from Ghost? They hadn't seen it. But their thing was like they had gone to the pottery class because they had seen some of their mates on Instagram do it. And it's like, it's one of those very classic, like, you know, you do it on a Saturday and you go sort of go for drinks afterwards or something like that. Which is to say, I think it's like an interesting shift, not a shift perhaps, but it's like the popularity of these types of classes as kind of, you know, a sort of day experience type of thing. And it sort of seems to be, and I wondered as like a professional potter, but also someone who does teach, like, has there sort of been, is it the kid, like, am I just seeing stuff, or has there sort of been like a surge in the interest in doing pottery in this type of casual way? And like, what do you think is like driving that in terms of, I mean, like also the demographic of people doing it, kind of, at least and anecdotally speaking, are around about like my age, and they're like, you know, in their 30s and their 40s. It does sort of seem like a hobby that like is very appealing to a generation. And I think even in the spirit of this type of like show, the masterclass show, where like so much of the conversations around it have come from this sort of feeling that, okay, what happens if you're of a generation where like you grew up on the internet, you spent probably most of your life working on the internet online, trying to make a career. You may have succeeded at it, but like by the time your 20s end, you sort of are thinking like, what was the point of all that? And you suddenly get this urge to like either be in nature or do something with your hands. And it feels more of like almost trying to correct, you know, a period of time where you were just so kind of plugged in that you were, you know, I wonder how much of that is just kind of people wanting to do stuff with their hands after a very long period of time where like that wasn't encouraged.